you may use any language. So when it comes to supplications, prayers, I mean, when you want to talk to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, you can do that with any language. Even in some cases, you may even do that without any language, I mean, without talking to God. So, I mean, worship is not limited only to salat. We can have many acts of worship in different languages, especially when it comes to dua or prayers. We can do it in any language. But the only point is about the Noble Book of Quran, which is revealed in Arabic language, and the Salat, which should be performed in Arabic language. And it has some reasons. First of all, we are talking about a language which, according to the viewpoint of the experts in this regard, is at least one of the most comprehensive languages of the world. In that, you are able to, iterate very profound meanings with very, great words and most powerful words. So the Arabic language is at least one of the best, if not the best language of the world in this regard.
That's right.
Now, regarding the Noble Book of Quran, first of all, the Noble Book of Quran was revealed in an Arabian region in Saudi Arabia. So no one can claim that then why the Quran was not revealed in English, for example. The first addressees of the Noble Book of Quran are speaking Arabic language. Although the religion of Islam is for all the people of the world, but Islam cannot ignore the region in which it was revealed. So the people of that region are speaking Arabic, and that is why, as the first addressees, they should understand the language of the Quran.
Okay.
And second of all, we know that the Quran challenges the people. And this is one of the miraculous aspects of the Quran. The Quran challenges the people to bring like the Quran, or 10 chapters like the Quran, or one chapter like the Quran. So if the Quran was revealed in any language other than Arabic, so this challenge was meaningless, because the first addressees did not know what this language is all about. So if the Quran is challenging, it means that the first addressees should understand, then they should try to bring like the Quran. They are not able to do so. So the Quran is proving the fact that no one can bring like the Quran.
That's right.
It is also mentioned in the Noble Book of Quran that had the Quran been revealed in any language other than Arabic language, then the pagans of Mecca or, peninsula would have claimed that, why the Quran was not revealed in our language. So this is one point, that regarding the Noble Book of Quran, we cannot ignore the fact that the first addressees of the Quran are speaking Arabic, and the Quran cannot be revealed in any language other than Arabic. The next point is that, according to our understanding based on the Quran and the narrations, the Prophet is the last Prophet, and he is a Prophet sent to the whole world. So Islam is not a religion limited to one part of the world, excluding other parts. So, we can have many Muslims from different parts of the world talking in different languages, but all of them, they can become Muslims and they can embrace the religion of Islam. But now the point is that when it comes to the acts of worship, we have two dimensions. We have, the esoteric one and the exoteric one.
Yes.
The apparent face of the acts of worship should show that all these Muslims belong to the same nation, mm-hmm. to the same ummah. We are not talking about the intention of the people. That's something for each and every person, himself or herself. But the point is that when all these Muslims come together, Islam wants the Muslims to be united. Let me give the dear listeners an example. We know that one of the acts of worship, one of the obligations, is the pilgrim of Hajj.
Yes.
So, and it has different rituals, for example, circumambulation around Kaaba with, uttering some word, and also we have prayer, especially congregational prayer around the Kaaba, and so on and so forth. Now imagine if the prayer, if Salat can be read in any language, millions of people gather around Kaaba and in the city of Mecca, and each and every one of them is saying the prayer in his or her own language. It could be a kind of chaos among the people. But when the Quran, when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has commanded all Muslims to say the prayer, the Salat in Arabic, it brings a great unity among all Muslims. Nowadays, all Muslims all around the world, at least they are, they have this duty to learn the Arabic that they need for saying the prayer. And it brings a kind of unity among the Muslims. And when they come together in congregational prayer, be it in Mecca, in Medina, or in any other place in the world, it doesn't make any difference. You may live in UK, for example.
Yes.
Different people come to a mosque, and they are coming from different countries, and they speak different languages. Now, if you imagine that each and every one of them wants to say the prayer in his or her language, then there is no congregational prayer anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of the reasons that Islam wants all Muslims to, at least when it comes to Salat, to say the Salat or prayer in one language.
Even they say that the Arabic language and the phrases which are repeated in our Salat and our supplications and du'as are not simply translatable into other languages.
Yeah, that's the first point that I shared, that when it comes to the comparison between different languages, the experts of different languages believe that Arabic language is at least one of the best,
mm-hmm.
one of the most comprehensive languages in terms of conveying the messages in different words and forms.
Tones and intonations, you
that's
know,
the point.
That's right, different wordings, okay.
So one of the reasons for the Salat to be read in Arabic language is to protect the unity among all the Muslims. Of course, as I mentioned, it doesn't mean that for all prayers, du'as and supplications, we need to use Arabic language. No, when you are talking to God outside the Salat, you can use any language.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Inshallah, you'll find your way. The other point is that when it comes to the prayer itself, Salat, we have a special act which is recommended, and this is called Qunut. At least according to some Shia scholars, specifically in this part of the prayer, you may use any language that you like. You may talk to God in Qunut, in the second rak'ah, which is recommended. In this part of the prayer, according to some of the Shia scholars, you can use any language in uttering your du'as and prayers to God. The next point that I would like to share, and this is a very important point, is that the fact that all Muslims have the obligation to say the prayer, the Salat in Arabic, it has a message that you should learn Arabic language so much that at least you are able to utter these Arabic sentences. And more important than that, you need to understand what you are saying. Unfortunately, many Muslims are heedless of this point, even Arabic-speaking people. They may utter and say Surah Al-Fatiha, read Surah Al-Fatiha, Surah Al-Tawheed, and other adhkar in the prayer, but they have no attention to the, at least, literal meanings of the world, of the words and the verses that they are reading. This is not encouraged at all. We have verses of the Quran and narrations of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam about the fact that we are in need of a concept that is called hudur al-qalb, or the presence of the mind and heart during the prayer. And one way to acquire that is to pay attention to the meanings of the words. And of course, this is the first stage. The great mystics go to, much higher levels. But at least for us as ordinary people, when we are reading the Quran, when we are saying our prayer in Arabic language, at least we need to pay attention to the literal meanings of the word.
Yes.
At the end of the day, we are talking to our Lord, to our Creator.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that you are talking to your friend and you just repeat some word. You don't pay attention to the meanings.
Mm-hmm.
It is an act of insult to your friend.
Yes.
So now we are talking about God, about our Creator, about the manager of the whole world. So it behooves all Muslims at least to pay attention to the words, to the verses, adhkar, that they say during the salat or prayer. And of course, by the same token, when we are reciting the Quran. Yes, reciting the Quran in and of itself is recommended. It may bring a reward for you. But if you are looking for salat to be effective, if you are looking for recitation of the Quran to be effective in your life, then we need to pay attention to the literal meaning of the verses, and then, of course, interpretation of the verses as well.
That's all right. The capacity of the language itself is very important. The Arabic language, according to some linguists, and the scholars of linguistics, they believe that is very much capable of conveying the spiritual messages and the, divine messages of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Not every language is capable enough of doing so. It's not capacitated enough. And the other point is that more than 14 centuries ago, the Holy Quran was revealed, and still it is understandable.
Mm-hmm.
So it shows the stability of a language, something during one or two centuries, so many languages of the world were changed totally in alphabet, in format, and in everything. But it's still the Arabic language has this fixed nature.
One last point about your first point.
Yes.
There are some verses in the Noble Book of Quran, because of the capacity of Arabic language, there are different ways for understanding and interpretation of that verse, and all of them are correct.
Yes.
And this might be unique about this Arabic language. I would like to ask dear listeners to refer to the interpretation of verse 102 of chapter Al-Mizan, and the number of different interpretations given for this verse in the tafsir of Al-Mizan written by Allama Tabatabai. According to some, there are thousands of ways for interpretation of this verse because of these capacities of Arabic language, which may not be found in any other language.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Karimi, for a nice elaboration regarding the topic, why the Holy Quran was revealed in Arabic language. It was very kind of you.
And thank you very much to the listeners for listening to this episode of Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li aliyin wa husayin wa hasan. Li aliyin wa husayin wa hasan. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي حسين وحسن
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Perhaps anticipating a hero's welcome, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky travelled to the Belgian capital on Thursday with a list of demands. He has asked for long-range missiles and warplanes to use against Russian forces. He also wants Kiev to be granted EU membership without delay.
Of course, membership, and that's why, of course, we need it this year. And this year, Charles, when I say this year, I mean this year.
Those with intimate knowledge of how the EU works believe it is a pipe dream.
Turkey will not be pleased because they are already waiting since 2005 in formal discussions. Then we have the Western Balkans. Also there, something is boiling in Bosnia and Serbia. So these countries, they will say, wait a minute, what about us? And for sure, there are definitely member states who will block this.
EU leaders concluded their latest summit on Friday. The most up-to-date cost of supporting Ukraine was revealed. And it's eye-watering.
67 billion of support we have mobilized in the last 12 months, from budget support to fast recovery, from energy supply to military capabilities, from humanitarian aid to refugee support, and we must do more.
A number of EU lawmakers encourage solidarity with Ukraine, but also want support for the bloc's own hard-pressed citizens.
Solidarity with our most vulnerable, who struggle to put food on the table or heat the home, or those in difficulty maintaining a roof over their heads.
While Zelensky was touring Europe, who was running the show back in Kiev? US and NATO commanders? The Kremlin has warned Western powers not to become too involved in the conflict. There's no doubt EU citizens have a great deal of sympathy and empathy for the people of Ukraine. But there's growing concern about the level of pressure, some might call it provocation, being exerted on Russia by Western leaders. Many are nervously asking, when might Putin say, enough is enough? Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
In February 1951, with the Korean War raging, the South Korean army killed more than 700 fellow South Koreans, suspected communist sympathizers. The victims of the Gochang massacre were found to be innocent civilians. Most of them were women and children. Jung Young-ju was 4 years old when much of his family was killed.
The only people around here then were very young and very old, living simple lives with no role in politics. But the soldiers rounded them up and killed them. Those young children, the elderly South Korean women, what's wrong with them? When I think about it now, I cry and can't sleep.
Since the 1990s, memorials and a museum have been established. But for decades, the massacre was suppressed by South Korea's military dictatorships and previous monuments destroyed. Early local investigators faced state-sponsored violence in prison. Survivors now seek compensation.
If the restoration of honor is to be real, I think compensation for our bereaved family must be completed.
South Korea's Supreme Court last December ruled in favor of the victims of the Gochang massacre, suggesting the state may be responsible for the killings. Lee Sung-yul is lobbying the National Assembly to pass a law outlining redress.
The court found that the victims were killed by the armed forces, so the Gochang massacre should be compensated even more than other similar incidents in South Korea. That was the ruling of the Supreme Court at the end of last year. The Gochang massacre must be compensated by the state.
The Gochang massacre represents just one episode of South Korea's often painful and forgotten past. But the divisions laid bare here remain, as survivors seek compensation and understanding from their nation. Frank Smith, Gochang, South Korea.
A ceremony in the Afghan capital Kabul has marked the 44th anniversary of Iran's Islamic Revolution. bringing together officials from Afghanistan's Taliban ruling system as well as foreign diplomats representing various countries. In the event, Shir Mohammad Abbasistanek Zayd, the deputy foreign minister of Afghanistan, stressed that Iran's 1979 revolution was an Islamic and popular movement.
Our neighbor and friend Iran today celebrates a movement that 44 years ago led to the foundation of an Islamic government in Iran under the leadership of late Imam Khomeini. A positive point of this revolution is that it achieved victory in a short period.
The Islamic Revolution of Iran also had an impact on other nations, especially those that had been oppressed, and inspired them to stand against tyranny.
Following the Islamic Revolution in Iran, the issue of imperialism turned into world arrogance, oppression and justice. This Islamic viewpoint didn't remain limited to Islamic countries. Even today, you see movements against world arrogance in Latin America. It was right after the Islamic Revolution that plots of the adversaries started to fail. I can refer to the U.S. presence in Afghanistan and Iraq that happened to be big failures for the U.S.
ما پیروزیمون وقتی است که دست این اجانب
Shortly after Iran's Islamic Revolution, Afghanistan was also invaded by the Soviet Union. In those years, the Iranian Revolution inspired people here to stand against the invaders.
Afghanistan might be the country that was inspired the most by the revolution, especially in the early years following its victory. The fight against the Soviet forces in Afghanistan became more serious at that time, and it eventually led to the eviction of the Soviet Union from Afghanistan.
44 years after the Islamic Revolution of Iran, more and more countries commemorate their revolution and this spirit of standing against tyranny. The Islamic Revolution of Iran 44 years ago was the beginning of a trend that in Afghanistan inspired people to expel then Soviet Union. Dullah Mirzadeh, Kabul.
The National Media Association in Lebanon held a gathering in the capital Beirut to show solidarity with the Syrian people who continue to suffer because of the U.S. sanctions imposed under the so-called Caesar Act. The journalists, media figures, politicians, and representatives of the resistance front noted that Syria stood with the resistance groups when the world had abandoned Palestine and Lebanon, and that now is the time to stand with Syria.
From Beirut, the National Media Association announces the Beirut Declaration and calls on the Arab and Islamic people and the free people in the world to work on confronting oppression and stopping the wars of sanctions and famine, which are against basic human rights.
The U.S. State Department has claimed that the sanctions do not target humanitarian aid, but Monday's earthquake has proven the opposite.
It's a mere maneuver by the United States just to confront this wave of indictment to the United States. And it's a way for them to reimpose the sanctions in order to achieve their geopolitical agenda. I believe that we need to keep pressuring the United States, exerting pressure, moral and material pressure, in order to lift the sanctions of Syria.
Over 3,000 people have so far died as a result of the catastrophic earthquake in Syria, as rescue teams continue to search for survivors under the rubble of the buildings, which have been completely leveled to the ground. In addition to rescue efforts, the Syrian people are in dire need of essentials like medicine and fuel, which have not been allowed to enter Syria because of the Western sanctions.
They cannot still like turning around sending humanitarian aids to Syria through NGOs or others. It should be through the governments of Syria. After all, the government is doing all the necessary job to help people and to take them to hospitals or to make shelters or so.
On February 6th, the 7.8 magnitude earthquake struck Turkey and Syria, killing thousands in the two countries. While countries like Iran and Russia have sent aid to Syria, the amount of humanitarian assistance that reached the Arab country is still very little compared to the international aid sent to Turkey.
At least five rescue teams from Lebanon headed directly to Syria to provide all the assistance they can of the rescue efforts, yet many are saying the aid that many are providing is not enough. Participants here today stressed that the U.S. and its Western allies need to lift the unjust sanctions against Syria and the Syrian people. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
More than 1,700 guests attended the National Day reception in the center of Moscow, hosted by the Iranian embassy, to mark the 44th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution. The reception was attended by top Russian dignitaries, as well as military figures and members of the civil society. Non-Russian diplomats could also be seen at the event.
Basing on objective analysis, I am absolutely sure that now our Russian people with Iranian people should fight together against the great enemy, our common enemy, understanding together each other better and better, as well on the spiritual level.
The prominent philosopher says he predicted that modern Iran and Russia would grow closer years ago. They share the same values, interests, and both belong to the ancient Eurasian civilization. They also seek to bring an end to years of Western dominance and oppression across the globe.
Iran is truly one of a kind in this world. It has one of the most ancient civilizations, and it continues to live up to that legacy. Despite heavy sanctions and pressure, they have made astonishing achievements in the past four decades. People are high-spirited. Iranians yearn for development. I'm very glad that the relations between Iran and Russia are flourishing. Together we can solve many problems in West Asia and around the world.
According to Russian Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak, in the last year alone, trade with Iran and Russia has reached $5 billion. The position of the two countries is in tune with a number of international agendas. The two nations oppose the model of a unipolar device and will do everything to defend their sovereignty.
Iran is an example of a harmonious combination of the principles of religion, human rights, and national interests. We maintain a high intensity of political and economic dialogue between our countries. Russian-Iranian cooperation is reaching a qualitatively new strategic level despite the illegal pressure of unfriendly countries.
The guests of the reception all believed in one thing. The stability of Iran's Islamic revolution is due to the unquestioning support of people. Iranians are defending their revolution despite constant propaganda as well as huge funds to overthrow its results.
The anniversary of Iran's 1979 Islamic Revolution is commemorated in Russia every year. As the two countries continue to expand ties, Russian political elite pay their respect to Iran. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Iranians from different walks of life have participated in the commemoration rally from all parts of the metropolitan Tehran to the iconic Azadi Square to mark and celebrate the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution and renew allegiance with the ideals of the revolution.
The Iranian nation toppled the US-backed Pahlavi regime 44 years ago, ending 2,500 years of monarchy in the country. The Islamic Revolution led by Imam Khomeini established a new political system based on Islamic values and democracy.
The celebration was held in Tehran and over 1,400 cities and 38,000 villages around the Islamic country.
We are here to support our country and we are here to tell the U.S. to back off so that we can make more improvements in our country. We're going to support this government, this country forever. We're going to support our supreme leader. So you just have to stop interfering in our affairs. And we want to say that down with the U.S. because you've been the cruelest country in the world.
We celebrate the 44th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution to show the world that despite all riots and plots hatched by the enemies, our Islamic Revolution is strong and powerful. We love our leader and the Islamic Revolution and are ready to sacrifice our life for the ideals of our revolution.
Addressing crowds of people at Azadi Square, Iran's president, Ebrahim Raisi, said West's policy of imposing sanctions and maximum pressure on the Islamic Republic has failed, thanks to the resistance of the Iranian nation.
West's policy imposing sanctions and maximum pressure on the Islamic Republic has failed thanks to the resistance of the Iranian nation. The United States and its allies failed to stop the Iranians from making progress. The Iranians managed to make the enemy's plots futile. The West, the US in particular, stands accused of human rights violations by waging wars in countries like Iraq, Afghanistan, and Yemen. The West must be held accountable for its crimes in the region.
The demonstrators underlined the necessity of preserving national unity and avoiding any measure that would foment division and sedition in the country. Analysts believe that after 44 years since the victory of the Islamic Revolution, and despite different forms of conspiracies against the Islamic establishment, Iran has now been turned into a beacon of hope for freedom seekers and the oppressed nations of the world. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Iran's oil-rich city of Ahwaz is hosting 270 local firms active in the production of petroleum equipment, as well as contractors of mega oil projects, to take part in the 13th Ahwaz Oil Show. The aim of the four-day event is to support manufacturers of key petroleum equipment that are on the list of U.S. sanctions.
We have invited all of the local companies operating in oil well services, instrumentation, and the production of any equipment that's required in the oil and gas industry. They are here to achieve synergy with each other and state-owned firms with the ultimate goal of increasing our oil production.
For decades, Iran relied on drilling bits produced by Germany, the U.S., and even China to pump its crude. But U.S. oil embargoes on Iran made it almost impossible to import efficient bits, among other oil exploration and production equipment. This forced Iran to try its own know-how to build its needed machinery from drilling bits to pipelines.
After almost 110 years of dependence on the import of drilling bits, our engineers at Asmari, along with other Iranian firms, have been able to indigenize the bit technology. So we design and manufacture a range of drilling bits locally, and this is thanks to the restrictions caused by sanctions.
With regard to sour service pipes, our company used to import them for its oil-related projects. We didn't need to reinvent the wheel, but after Trump imposed sanctions on Iran in 2018, we put our heads together and managed to produce our own anti-corrosion pipelines.
In 2018, Iran was the third largest oil producer in the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. Following the U.S. reimposition of sanctions against Iran in 2018, Iran's oil output almost halved to less than 2 million barrels a day, while its exports tumbled to less than 1 million BPDs. That's why the government in Iran is now making a seismic shift to local manufacturers to rebuild its oil sector, a long-term goal which, if accomplished, will make the country an oil power.
About seven decades ago, Iran marked a milestone by nationalizing its petroleum industry. Today, it is on track toward indigenizing the strategic sector, something which experts here describe as another turning point in the oil industry, as it would shield the country's economy from the impacts of oil embargoes. Yusuf Jalali, Ahvaz.
In line with a fourth meeting of Iran and Russia media cooperation, a delegation of Russian television executives, as well as TV and radio station managers, led by the Russian Deputy Minister of Digital Affairs, visited the IRIB World Service's TV and radio stations. That included the Spanish channel Hispan TV and the English news network Press TV, a chance for the Russian delegation to observe the technical developments up close.
Both the Russian and the Iranian side have reached a point where they are ready for practical steps after holding several rounds of meetings and signing cooperation agreements. We have laid the groundwork, and our audience will soon be enjoying our joint TV and radio productions.
The visit also provided the opportunity to discuss potential areas of cooperation.
We can cooperate in exchange of content. It's movies, TV series, it's cartoons and documentaries. There is a very broad field.
The details were carefully discussed in order to break down the steps and see how the two sides can take cooperation to the next level.
First and foremost, representatives were appointed from both sides to be directly in touch and to be in charge of joint media productions from now on.
Iran and Russia are both under pressure and sanctions by Western countries, so this meeting and the one we had 2 days ago are of strategic importance. There is great potential, and I believe that we can immediately begin joint radio production.
But the highlight of this meeting was how to neutralize Western sanctions, particularly in the field of media, with the Iranian side sharing its valuable experiences in this regard.
We are witnessing a new world order, and under these circumstances, regional and international powers such as Russia, Iran, and China will be growing closer and develop stronger alliances. Russians are experiencing sanctions aimed at isolating them since the war in Ukraine has begun. We can share years of experience with them in this regard. Our media cooperation not only allows unheard voices to be heard, but it will also reshape public opinion.
Both sides agree that the groundwork is prepared and joint production can start in 2023, marking the beginning of a strategic alliance in a multipolar world where all voices can be heard. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
A new report has found that Britons are facing a permanent reduction in living standards. Economists have predicted that this year, 7 million British households will be affected. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to RT, UK households are suffering a permanent decline in living standards as wages lag behind double-digit inflation and families struggle to pay their bills. The National Institute of Economic and Social Research, NIESR, has warned. According to a forecast by the UK's oldest independent economic research institute, released recently, 7 million households, which is the equivalent of 1 in 4, will be unable to cover their energy and food bills once the government starts scaling back its subsidies program in April. Energy prices remain high while inflation is running above 10%, more than 5 times the Bank of England's 2% target. NIESR said the target will not be reached until the second half of 2025. Grocery inflation alone soared to a new record of 16.7% in the 4 weeks of January, taking the average annual food shopping bill in the UK to £5,504, up £788 from last year, according to the latest research by Kantar. NIESR economists warn that middle-income households will be hit hardest by the cost-of-living crisis in Britain. While the poorest families receive additional state aid, the middle classes will face a decline of between 7% and 13% in their disposable income, or as much as £4,000. What we have seen is that the shocks that have come along have progressively made us poorer per person, said NIESR director Jadid Chadha. Although the institute believes the UK will narrowly escape a recession, it predicts the country will see anemic growth of just 0.2% this year before GDP rises 1% in 2024 and 1.6% in 2025. For millions of households, it will certainly feel like a recession, NIESR warned. This malaise seems to be affecting large parts of the advanced world, but on many measures, the UK looks as though it's toward the bottom of performance, and I think that's a great concern, said Chadha. Earlier this month, the International Monetary Fund, IMF, said that Britain will have the worst economic performance among other major industrialized nations and will become the only G7 member to face a recession this year. Meanwhile, Guardian reported that the UK economy is not yet clear of difficulty. Chancellor of Exchequer Jeremy Hunt has warned recently following the release of data showing the nation had avoided recession narrowly. According to the Office for National Statistics, GDP showed zero growth in the final quarter of 2022 and a month-on-month decline of 0.5% in December. The UK economy shrank 0.3% in the third quarter of the last year. Another contraction would have meant a technical recession defined by two consecutive quarters of decline. The Chancellor stressed, however, we are not out of the woods yet, particularly when it comes to inflation. If we stick to our plan to halve inflation this year, we can be confident of having amongst the best prospects for growth of anywhere in Europe. According to the latest outlook issued by the Bank of England, the UK will enter a recession in 2023, but it will be shallower than previously predicted. Meanwhile, the National Institute of Economic and Social Research, NIESR, has warned that this year will feel like a recession for many. Due to a severe cost of living crisis with soaring inflation, borrowing costs, and energy bills.
Start. Movement. Speed. Live in hope. Toward the peak. On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islamite. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of Youth Station.
Salam alaikum. I am also very welcome to be welcomed by you.
Yeah, of course. It's a pleasure to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be here. And yeah, welcome to Youth Station, I guess.
It's been so long that you haven't been here.
Yeah, well, time flies, as we say.
Yeah, time flies, really. It flies. So how are you?
I am good. Alhamdulillah.
So thank God. So everything is peachy and we're going good.
Yep, so far butterflies, rainbows and butterflies.
So what do you say about jealousy?
What do I say about jealousy? A big no-no.
So now that it's no-no, have you ever been a jealous person toward anyone or anything?
If you look carefully, you might like look at your life. You might realize that you might have been jealous sometime at, in the past, but I don't remember feeling jealous.
For too long.
No. Like, realizing that I'm jealous in the moment. You know what I'm saying? So if I look back years, I might be like, yeah, I think that was jealousy. You know what I'm saying?
Oh.
But at that point...
But how come you don't understand it's jealousy?
I don't know, because I think I would have been, or I was, a brat, you know what I'm saying? Because, yeah, and, well, there are two reasons for a person not to be jealous.
Yeah.
That's at least, well, how I see it, is
which
that
are?
Is either that person is a very grateful, thankful, realistic person, mm-hmm. you know, who sees the depth of reality and does not feel jealous.
Yeah.
The second type of person, which would be a brat, mm-hmm. is that no matter what he sees in other people, he thinks, well, I have that and that's better. You understand? Like, so he would never really, nothing would catch his eye in that manner.
Yes.
For him to feel jealous or wanting to have yes. that.
So you're indifferent.
Yeah. Indifferent is the right
word.
Let's
put it this way. Yeah. You're indifferent.
Yeah. Yeah. Back then, that's what I'm saying. Like, I would have been, even when I was a teenager, I think I was quite indifferent. So,
So it's a blessing. Being indifferent is a blessing, I suppose.
In that manner, yeah, if I'm not
in many matters,
jealous.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. So it wasn't something that bothered me, like some anything in another person that which might be good or society sees it.
We actually should make a session and you should recommend us on how to be indifferent.
I have no idea. I think it's just in your nature. Some people are indifferent, but that might also be the reason for someone to not be motivated enough to be doing something,
yeah.
right? So when it's got its positive, you know, its mm-hmm. pros, it might have its cons.
Yeah,
you understand?
Yeah, that's very true. So before we go to the reasons of jealousy, let's go for a short break and then we'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So this is Youth Station. I am Asma, and in here, Brother Najafi is sitting right beside me, and we're talking about jealousy, of course, the thing which nobody claims to be one of, but I guess it happens to every single one of us, at least in a special phase of our life.
Yeah, we might not even remember, but when you see little kids...
Yeah, you should go between the lines.
Yeah, even before you remember things you've done, if you observe children...
Yeah.
Sometimes you see a lot of jealousy in children, you understand?
So they are innocent. How come they know about jealousy?
I don't know. We might... Actually, that's another perspective. We might see it as jealousy. It might be... protectiveness.
Possessiveness.
Yeah. In the children. For example...
And since they have no mask, they show it.
Yeah, yeah, it's very visible.
Yeah.
Some other kid is playing with their toys or another kid, if the mother is holding another kid, the kid's like, oh, she's my mom, not yours.
Even between the siblings.
Precisely. So that infant or that toddler, he expresses whatever he feels.
Exactly.
So yeah, you might even see that.
But when they grow older, the story is going to be more complicated.
Yeah,
they're no longer a kid, so they won't show it, but they keep it inside.
Yeah.
And when you keep it inside, after a time, it turns into a pile of negative emotions, and then it would turn into a complex.
An infection.
Yeah.
An emotional infection, yeah.
Yes, yes. So if you want to define jealousy, how do you define that?
Jealousy, how it's been defined, is that you see something in someone. It might be property, it might be trait, it might be a skill, whatever it is. And you wish that for yourself whilst not wishing it for the person who possesses it, right? So if I'd want
to... Is that all?
If you do not wish it... you wish it for yourself, but you don't have a problem with the person having it, then that's envy, right?
Yes.
So jealousy is like, why does that person have it? Right? Why do they have it?
Which is so dangerous.
Yeah, of course, yeah. If you don't, like, put a leash on that, it's very dangerous, you know.
Yeah,
some people might go to the extent of harming other people who possess whatever.
And even yourself, you know. Feeling jealousy is something that would kill you from the inside.
Yeah, if you do not go to the extent of harming the other person, you might end up, either you've got the power to harm other people, and you do that, which is very bad, or you don't have the power and you keep on eating up yourself within. So either way, it's very dangerous.
Yeah, it's very true. See, there are some stories, some novels and some movies. When you watch them, we sympathize with the person who is going through the jealousy sometimes, of course.
Yeah.
Because it is charged with a trigger, and that trigger is being oppressed or being neglected from other people around you.
Okay.
For no reason, you know? There's no special reason for that. Then you feel oppressed, and then for a short time, maybe, you ignore it. But when it goes for a prolonged time, then you cannot ignore it. Then you that sense of jealousy is going to be developed in you more and more, is going to show itself in different formats.
Yeah, if it grows, then it moves on, you understand? It's got no limits. So if you allow that to grow on you, then it might be your neighbor at first, but then it goes on and on, you know? It extends to other people,
yeah.
Your siblings, your parents. And that's when you can't focus on your own life anymore.
Exactly. You know? So I'm just saying that jealousy is not always stemmed from your inner self. I mean, sometimes it is not in your nature to be jealous, but
right.
Sometimes the environment and the people around you make you jealous.
Yeah, you know, yeah, society has been formed in a manner, especially now when materialism is at its peak. Yeah,
exactly.
Certainly, people would look down at you if you do not have that, I'd not want to use the word motivation because that's not the correct word, but let's say motivation because that's how society sees it now. Because,
exactly,
you know,
yeah.
Like some people are going to be like, are you not bothered by the fact that, for example.
Yeah, give us an example.
Two brothers mm-hmm. have got wives, right?
Yeah.
And, for example, the first brother treats his wife differently.
Yeah, yeah.
And the second brother's wife.
Yeah, very naturally. People are different,
right,
yes.
Right, different, exactly. And the woman's friends are going to be like, oh, how do you let him treat you like that? Or, you know, whereas his brother does that for, you know, and that grows on the wife.
Yeah, yeah. But,
it's not necessarily a wife. Even the husband, for example, you know, he looks at his wife. He's oh, how come his wife is treating him like that, and why is my wife not treating me the same way?
Yes,
right.
Yes,
so
yeah.
instead of
flame the fire.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So now they have this mindset. Instead of focusing on their own lives, the couple,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
They go around looking at other couples and comparing their lives mm-hmm. with theirs, which is, of course, not the right way, because every life is different. Every
exactly.
individual is different. Yeah.
And we should notice the very fact that human beings are different. Every single one of us is just like these fingerprints. We're different. We cannot apply the rules for everyone, just like a rule. So let's listen to something and then we'll continue the story of jealousy. Gave us an example. Now when we talk about families, you see there's always a child who's jealous in the families.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Not always, but yeah.
Most of the times.
Like
if you go deep down, see, when I talk to other families, you know, the relatives and my friends and whomever, if you ask them, does your mother love one of you more than the other, then they would say yes. For sure.
Right.
See,
okay.
I guess every single family is suffering from the very same thing. Maybe they don't show it and it doesn't bother them, but still they feel that someone is more loved with the parent.
Mm. That might be true, that might not be true, but yeah, that is the element is there in one of the siblings.
So I just want to say that the material, just like what you say, is there and it exists. This feeling exists in everyone's inner self. So, just as we were talking about the reasons, do you see any more flagrant reason that we could talk about of jealousy? So, one of them is being neglected by other people. And one of them is your nature itself, because sometimes it has been rooted in your childhood. It runs in your blood. And you are jealous in a way that it shows itself in different phases of your life.
Something that I can put my finger on is ignorance towards what you already possess.
Yeah.
Right. So that can also be a route to
so being ungrateful.
Ungrateful because, right, one might be ungrateful because they might know they have certain thing, but they are ungrateful. Either
unaware
way,
of
right?
it.
Right? Unaware of. Yeah, some people might
they
be ignorant of the fact that they actually possess that certain mm-hmm. positive thing, whatever it is, right? So they do not aware. So they, well, do not pay attention to what they already possess. In terms of attention, for example, even the example that you gave about siblings and the attention they have from their parents. Yeah, so they are not aware of the love or support or whatever emotion their parents have for them, right? So mm-hmm. they're not focusing on what they possess in terms of whatever we mentioned right now. Rather, they're focusing on his brother, his sister, her sister, her brother, what they have gotten from their parents.
Yeah, I
right?
get it. So psychologically, if you penetrate into the mindset of these kind of people, the story is going to be so complicated. Sometimes there are some special events that happen in your childhood, and then it starts to create a trauma in your brain.
Yeah, yeah.
And then as you grow older, it will turn into this hyper-possessiveness that you feel toward things in people.
Let me give you an example from my own life. I remember I was a very spoiled little kid, and I was actually very, very troublesome, right? I was a troublemaker.
Oh, wow. It didn't say so.
Yeah, I was a troublemaker.
Do not judge a book by its cover.
Never, yes. Yeah. So even in our siblings, I was absolutely, the worst, you know what I'm saying? I was like that. And I remember once, now look at this, being a child and how it has an effect on your mind over the long term. So this is ages ago, I think I was what? I know I was under 12 when this happened,
so,
right?
Yeah.
We were at a zoo, and me being the naughtiest in the house, mm-hmm. I remember I was walking and my older brother was kicking me from behind, right?
Yeah.
He was like kicking my legs or like trying to trip me
so,
or something.
And
I'm
what
not
happened?
Sure.
Yeah. Yes.
And I complained to my mom, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was very loud about it, and I was like, oh, noisy. And my mom said, oh, you are the troublemaker, you understand? So instead of, pointing him out or telling him off, once she told me off. But that once happened to be the time where I wasn't at fault, you understand?
Yeah,
so that was
that
once that I wasn't at fault, but the rest of the time I was always at fault. But that once held on to me, you understand?
Get it. Yes.
Because I was like, oh, it was my fault, you know?
That,
so that
one time had its effect.
Yeah, it did. Effect.
Yeah, so it's very true. See, jealousy exists in every single human being. I guess it runs in our blood. And sometimes jealousy is good, sometimes it's negative. When it's good, it may develop you. And when it's bad, it might turn you into a beast. So we should be very much careful about our inner self and take care of own self in a matter of not getting too engaged with the lives of others or comparing ourselves with others or whatever. So, and that's all the time that we have for today's episode. Thank you for staying with us until another session. I bid you farewell.
Wassalamu alaikum
wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.